This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It is episode 60 today. Woohoo! Episode 60. Anyways, it's amazing. Sooner than later, we're going to be at episode 100. Wow. Then I can go into syndication. For those of you who don't know, with television shows, they always have a big party at episode 100 because typically when you get to episode 100, you can sell the show in syndication, and if it's a popular show, you end up, you know, making some money at that point. Anyways, I don't think we'll probably be able to sell this in syndication, and I doubt this is going to make any money, but that's okay. That's okay. We're doing it anyways. It's been a good week this week. Everything still seems to be working fine. Everything's puttering along with that big deploy that we did. I'm just finishing up a few things, and it looks like there's another big project in the pike at this same client. We've been chatting a little bit, and I have to meet with some people next week to see if I'm what they're looking for, and we'll talk a little bit, and then we'll see, and everything will work out, and it will be fine. Just fine. Sometimes when I drop my voice, you lose my words. It will be fine. Knit Central seems to be puttering along. I was over Monday night and just had a lovely time with my daughter doing some more recording, and she's editing some things up. And so that's going well. She is very close now to giving birth to their first child. So things are going to get very exciting in their lives in a little bit here. And I'm puttering along with Autodesk Inventor, working on my super secret project, which basically is 4 pieces of plastic. And it is my goal this week to get one of those pieces of plastic imaged inside of the machine. And as with everything, there's no substitute for doing it. So even though I thought I had pretty well everything figured out how I wanted things to be, the fact of the matter is that as soon as you start doing it, you realize you don't have it all figured out, and you tweak things as you go, and typically you build one and then throw that away, and then build it for real. At least several more times. So I'm in that process now, and I think I'm just about getting ready to throw away my first one. So we're making progress. Anyways, that's going well. Last week I had mentioned that we had a wonderful weekend with my daughter and son-in-law, and we went down to Branson, and we went to a radio show here, and I think I mentioned that we had gone to the IMAX because we had gotten some half-price ticket things, so we spent $50 and got $100 worth of gift certificates that we could use down at the IMAX complex down there, and so we decided we would head down there and blow the $100 on dinner and a movie and all that sort of thing, and that was a lot of fun. I think I had mentioned that we saw the show on Hubble and said that I might talk about it a little bit if I had time, and as I recall, I did not have time last week. Hopefully, I'm not going over the same information that I talked about last week. I don't think I am. Anyways, we did go down and watch the program on Hubble, the space telescope, and it was very cool. It not only dealt with the repairs that had been done to Hubble, which I had seen some programs on that, but it also had some of the just spectacular pictures that Hubble has been taking. And it was very cool in a couple of different ways. The first way that it was very cool is it was really fun to see humans encountering challenges and rising to the challenges and fixing things and making things work. And I've said this before, but I really believe that God has placed things here to be discovered. And when we do discover them, I really believe that God looks down and he says, good job! Good job! Because he gets a big kick out of us discovering the secrets that he has hidden here. And as the Proverbs say, it is the glory of God to hide a thing and the glory of kings to seek it out. And so in watching that discoveries that the Hubble has been able to make, in watching the innovation that humans have been able to make in the development of telescopes and space travel, and seeing that even though we've made all these innovations, sure enough, we do make mistakes and mirrors are warped and things wear out. And yet, here we come back at it again and we are persistent. We go back up there and fix it and then come up with more beautiful, beautiful photographs. So that was part of it that was just cool to me. It was just so fabulous to see that. But the other part, of course, was the beautiful, wonderful photographs that come out of that. And it's just an awesome thing to see these photographs. And they apparently can take the photographs and by analyzing the information in the photograph, either through redshift on the light or something, I don't know, are able to determine some depth perception on them. And so at one point, they actually did like a fly-through in one of these star nurseries. And that was very cool. It's all digitally imaged and generated. And so obviously the Hubble isn't out that far, but it was very cool doing the fly-through and rotating and saying, oh, see down there, there's a star that's being born. And And all the time they're doing this, they're popping off these numbers of, this is a stellar nursery that's 95 million light years across. It's like, oh man. You can't even get your brains around this. 95 million light years across. I think that was one figure they tossed out, but lands anything really over about 95 kilometers, I can't get my brain around. So, and one of the other things that they mentioned in this was the deep field imagery and the ultra deep field imagery. And I've mentioned this in the past, but they went over it again, which was very cool. And in case you haven't heard about the deep field imagery, you can actually find the pictures easily on the web if you just go out and search for deep field images or ultra deep field images. And what they did is they got time on Hubble, which is very expensive, and they turned it around and they pointed it at a dark spot in the sky and just opened up the camera and let it track it for 10 days just to see what was out there. And the images that came back from it are just spectacular. There's literally thousands of galaxies in this spot. And I was doing a little research on the web this week in preparation for chatting about this. And I came across a YouTube video that a guy had done talking about how, in his opinion, these were the most important images that had ever been taken by any telescope, because they help us to understand, at least in small part, the immensity of the universe. And it's really true, they do, because you think about, I think one analogy that I may have talked about before, one analogy that a scientist had, was that the deep field imagery would be like standing on Earth and looking through a straw at a given spot in the sky and staring at it and staring at it and staring at it. That's basically what Hubble did. And you come across with this image where every tiny dot on this image is a galaxy with millions and millions and millions of stars. Maybe billions of stars. And you, it just helps you in a little way think, wow, it's amazing. They did the same thing a second time where they even found a darker spot in the sky and they pointed it at that darker spot for, it was like 11 or 14 days or something like that. And that was the ultra deep field image. And I actually have it on my wall. I've mentioned that before. I have it on my wall. And it's just an awesome image. You can actually see some galaxies, but it's just has this huge scattering of these dots. And simply knowing that every single one of those dots is a galaxy at least as large as the Milky Way, it really kind of puts things into perspective. Now, one way that it put it into perspective for this individual who did the YouTube video that I was watching was from his perspective then, it was inconceivable that we could be the only ones in the universe. Because obviously, to him, there had to be other planets like Earth. And if there were other planets like Earth, then obviously life would have begun on those planets. And of course, there's some presuppositions in those obviouslys, but that's okay. I think the really important thing there is that sense of awe that these pictures generate. It's interesting, along that same vein, in a similar vein, I have an uncle who told my dad once that he simply could not believe in God because of the size of the universe. That he could not only, he not only had difficulty conceptualizing of the size of the universe, but since he had difficulty conceptualizing of the size of the universe, obviously he could not conceive of a being that was capable of creating that universe. Now, you know, there's quickly and easily, to me, a problem with that in that if you consider the universe to be all that there is, maybe that would be true. But if once you factor in dimensionality and existence and those things, we have an easy analogy of something, i.e. virtual worlds in computers, where we can set loose within these virtual worlds mathematical formulas that just propagate and create these huge universes. And when you break it all down, it really comes back to a very simple, elegant, designed mathematical formula. And so perhaps because I already believe in God, it's not really that big of a leap for me to consider that a being might exist that could create this universe. But I think if you put it in the context of virtual environments, do we actually live in a virtual environment? I don't think it's that hard to conceptualize of a being that could create all this. I think, however, there is also a follow-on, which is really what I want to talk about today. And the follow-on is that pretty much everyone, I think, who would be exposed to the size of the universe, pretty much everyone who would be exposed to the ultra deep field and the deep field images should come away from those images not only with a sense of awe at the size of the universe, but also come away from those images with a sense of how small Earth is and how remote Earth is, and how small we as humans are. And I think what you should come away with in looking at the deep field images is this idea of how minor we are just from this perspective of the amount of space there is in the universe. Let's just set that aside for a moment. Because in thinking about that, I was, for some reason, reminded of the fact that there seem to be many on this planet, men especially, who are overly convinced of their own importance. And in fact, there is a trait that runs fairly consistently through the male gender of the human race. And this trait is the trait of self-importance. That, and I think part of that is grown in us because of the gender roles that are arrived at in society. That of the male being the protector and the provider, and the female being the one who is protected and provided for. But these big patriarchal ideas of you are the little women and we'll take care of you. Well, see, what that does is it puts the male in this situation where, oh, I'm supposed to be powerful. I'm supposed to be strong. Capable. And someone who, you know, is this, has this ability to control my environment. And I think that's ridiculous. I mean, really, when you have some understanding of how massive the universe is, when you have some understanding of how little control we actually have over our environment, over the things around us, this preening of walking around egotistically and saying, I'm powerful, I just think it's silly. And I especially think it's silly when it leads men to the place that it robs their relationship with God because they're so busy trying to feel powerful. I listen to a lot of different kinds of music, and I take a little guff sometimes for the kinds of music that I listen to. There was one day when I was talking to one of the other programmers at work, and we were talking about different kinds of music and that kind of stuff, and he had mentioned that his wife really liked Sarah Groves, who's a contemporary Christian artist, and she sings a lot of songs about relationships and her feelings and those kinds of things. And I responded, yeah, I like Sarah Groves. I think she's a very talented poet, and I enjoy her music. And he kind of looked at me like, what? You're a guy and you enjoy that? Because in his mind, all this touchy-feely, talky stuff about relationships and stuff. You know, guys don't talk about that. We're powerful, you know. Okay, great. I was talking to another friend several weeks ago, and there are times in our conversations when we wander on the essence of our relationship with God. And I had quoted the poem that I had quoted several episodes ago about the God who only knows four words. I'm getting my mail. And the poem, as you may recall, comes down to the God who only knows four words, and those four words are, come dance with me. It's just a great poem. And I've already blown the punchline for you, but go read the poem if you don't know the poem. It's by Hafiz, the God who only knows four words. But the essence is that God is striving continually with each member of humanity and saying, come, be in relationship with me, dance with me. I'm backing into my garage. And when I told my buddy about that poem, I mentioned to him, and it's a slow dance. I said to him, you have to understand, it's a slow dance. And his response was, oh, don't be talking to me about that slow dance stuff with God. Because he's still working his way through the idea that God is passionately in love with him and wants an intimate relationship with him. He's still working his way through this idea of who am I as a man and what is my role as a man. And I think one of the things that slows up men from finding an intimacy with God is this idea of our own self-importance, this idea of we by ourselves constituting an essential part of the universe. This idea that we're going to relate to God on our terms and we're going to be strong and protectors and all of those stereotypical models, including egoism and machoism, instead of just realizing that we are weak and frail and minuscule specks of dust, who amazingly enough are loved by God. So go out to the web, look up Hubble Deep Field Images, and remember that what you're seeing there is just a tiny little portion of the sky, and yet there are thousands and thousands of galaxies that Hubble has found there. And see if that image doesn't inspire some awe in you. And then use that awe and that understanding of the tininess of our existence in conjunction with the great love that God has for us to craft within you a new appreciation of the relationship that God wishes to have with you. I know some people will never be able to believe that there is a God who created this entire universe, let alone a God who created this entire universe and who also desires a loving, personal relationship with us. But even if you don't believe that, just consider it for a moment. And consider what the ramifications would be in your life if you really believed that. If you really believed that the God who made that massive universe loves you and is looking out for you, it would certainly change your entire approach to life, would it not? This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it